I will shut down the government.
Okay, absolutely. Fair enough.
And
we
I am
disagree.
Proud, and I'll
we
tell
disagree.
You what, I am proud to shut down the government.
So I almost didn't talk about it last week because I read so many news reports and heard so many commentators saying there is no way that a government shutdown is going to come again. Yeah, they're talking about it in Congress, but Congress has definitely learned their lesson. There's not going to be another shutdown. And then, holy hell, we get this news this week. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melon, episode number 276, Reaganomics at the close of year 2018. And I want to thank every one of you so much for being here. So I've got an article here that I've been holding on to for a couple of years, and I've done this with this show quite a few times, sort of to see what is still relevant in a few years. I'll pull something 1 year and I'll just leave it in a certain box in my email. Because the way I compile stories for the show is I send emails to myself all week to remind me of certain stories. Then when it comes time to put the show together, at the end of the week, I go ahead and I look through those stories. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And then I can do something more narrow with this. I could do something more broad with this. And I sent myself a story back in late 2016. So this is just after the Trump election. Christmas is almost upon us. And over the years in my household, we have begun to take a much different approach to Christmas. I've mentioned this a few times on the show. The things that we enjoy about Christmas, one another. The things that we do not enjoy about Christmas, definitely travel. And second of all, gifts. Whoa, 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 whoa. There's a show that we've been watching on Netflix recently called Adam Ruins Everything. And it's a lot of uncomfortable truths about everything. About food, about hydration, about weddings. He takes on all of these things and he challenges our conventional beliefs with these particular things and tells us how we got to those beliefs. It's a wildly uncomfortable show, but I always end up making better decisions, more conscious decisions, more thoughtful decisions about really all of these subjects after I watch that show. And so with that in mind, I decided to approach today by just trying to get people to think about Christmas and consumerism a little bit differently. I enjoy the time off from work. I enjoy the time that I get with family. But I hate watching the greed. I remember when I first met my wife. I came from these dirt poor upbringings. I might have told this story on the show before, but for those of you that weren't around, certainly it begs repeating. And my wife's cousin's children, if I get that right, I would watch them on Christmas morning, and she and I had only been together maybe a year or two. I watched them on Christmas morning just shredding these gifts, just tearing them apart, throwing them to the side after, oh, look, it's this, throw it aside, next. Tear open the gift, oh, look, it's this, next. Tear, oh, look, it's this, next. Excited for a second, but then hucking it to the side, and me in absolute horror. And then after the whole show was over, I didn't grow up with any Christmas gifts. After the whole show was over, they just push their crap to the side. Mom and Dad, load it in the car. And they go do something else dumb, you know, flush something down the toilet that they shouldn't or whatever the hell they did. I was stunned. I didn't say anything to anybody. Well, not at the time. But I said to my wife later, yo, baby, as a person that comes from pretty meager upbringings, that was really hard to watch. Well, you know, that's just the way things are. You know, within a few years, I myself, as I become more of a member of the family, enjoyed, you know, those kinds of days. Not where I'd tear things open and throw it to the side. That was never my thing, and it will never be my thing. I prefer to not even get gifts now. But I would open up the gifts, and I try to be thoughtful about them. But then I got to thinking, I go, after so many years where I got to benefit from that side of Christmas as well, I started saying, as I watched crap pile up in my house, because that's what I would do. We'd go to Grandma and Grandpa's house on Christmas, and they're lovely people, and they'd get us all these gifts, and we'd go ahead and load them into the car, and we'd go home at the end of the day, get home, put everything away. 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, huh? It wasn't until I moved from Spokane to Portland in 2011, and I took three, mind you, three truckloads. Not like a pickup truck, like the biggest truck that U-Haul has, the largest truck that you are allowed to drive with a Class C license. I've got a B, but they don't rent those trucks for folks like myself. I'd have to go to Penske or something like that, I think. Three of the biggest trucks, and I get, hold on a minute. I had something pretty dramatic happen to me in 2001. The same year that I met my wife. When I moved from Las Vegas to Spokane, I was living in Seattle. I lived in Vegas and Seattle. Wow. I was living in Seattle with a girl. We broke up. Things went wrong. So we break up. My buddy drives from Spokane to Seattle to pick me up. Everything that I own fits into his car. He doesn't have an abnormally sized car, but everything that I own, music, clothes, everything fits in that car. Just in the back seat of his car. Plenty of room in the front for both of us. In the trunk of his car, in the back seat of his car, everything fits. By 2011, and I'm married, obviously, by 2011, I have so much stuff that I have three gigantic truckloads, three 26-foot trucks full of crap that I'm moving from one house to another. And then I realized, all those Christmases, those were fabulous. Those were fun. But the thing that I remember are the times that we had, the meals that we enjoyed, the conversations that we had over drinks. That was the stuff that I enjoyed. You know what I do not enjoy? Being smothered by stuff. And why the hell am I allowing myself and my family to be smothered by stuff? Now, there's five of us, okay? But you could easily say that, you know, three quarters or even an entire truck easily belongs to me. Then once the DJ business started, I began accumulating more stuff, but that stuff that I was accumulating was for the purpose of a business. And so we are now in a mode. Every week or every couple of weeks, we make a trip. We go to the Goodwill and we dump a van load of stuff. We're getting rid of stuff. In a couple of weeks, we're gonna bring a dump truck out here. Not a dump truck, like a big container, like a garbage sized container, like a big industrial construction site dumpster. I'm not kidding. And we're gonna throw a bunch of stuff in, and I'm just getting rid of all this crap. And it feels like such a waste. I accumulated it all. Some of it I used once. Some of it I didn't use at all. Some of it just stayed in the damn boxes it came in. This is gross. And it's going to be given away. If it's that new, I've given it away. If it can't be sold by Goodwill, then I throw it away. I don't give crappy stuff to Goodwill and make them throw it away. I throw it away, which is why I'm going to pay like $400 to bring a freaking dumpster to my house to throw it away. And I go, why in the hell do I do this? Why did I do this? Why does everyone do this? And the reason is simple. Money. Money and marketing. And lots of it. We are in the time of year where we are being told the stuff that you have is not good enough. You know what you need? Other stuff. You need other stuff. You need better stuff. Oh, that stuff that you already have? That stuff is crap. I don't even know why you keep that stuff around. And we end up in this perpetual cycle where all we're doing is just collecting crap we don't need, spending money that sometimes we don't have on crap that we don't need. I was listening to a news report and they said something in the neighborhood of like 20 or 30% of people are still buried underneath the debt that they accumulated for last year's Christmas, a year later, still buried under the debt that they accumulated for Christmas. And why? Are they better? Are their lives better? Absolutely not. They paid for stuff that they don't need with money that they don't have. And what's worse, because of 30% credit card rates, they're paying way more than they needed to. So the article that I have here that I pulled from a few years ago, it's The Dark Side of Christmas, The Impact on Sweatshops. Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Of course, by Giving Tuesday, everybody's out of money. Small Business Saturday. Yeah, I celebrate Small Business Saturday. I go on social media and I push for it. I go, you know what? I'm not really a business that you can really support on Small Business Saturday. It's not the kind of business I run. I don't run a consumer type where you buy crap. But I say, you know what? Go out and support the small businesses. Quoting here from the article, the imagery of cheerful elves making gifts in Santa's workshop is far from the reality and contributes to hide our sight from the conditions of workers in the factories that make what we so enthusiastically buy. Some 80% of the world's toys are manufactured in China, and just about every popular children's toy bearing a Made in China label on its underbelly. The harsh reality is that long before Christmas songs are blasting from every department store in the West, these elves, who are in fact real, living Chinese workers, are forced to work around the clock to churn out millions of products ready for arrival in the Western stores for the festive season. In the UK alone, Chinese toy factories serve a market worth $3.53 billion. Yet, the big brands for which these products are made, including Lego and Disney, pay factories only a fraction of the shop price, with the social and environmental costs not reflected in the price of these toys. Exploitation is the only term adequate to describe this phenomenon. Of course, sweatshop labor is not limited to toys. Also included is electronics and apparel. Topping many Christmas wish lists are Apple, Amazon, and Samsung, companies all found to be complicit in workers' rights violations with their supply chains. In the company of notable high street brands such as Nike and Topshop, Samsung have come under criticism for exposing their workers to toxic chemicals and for their no union policy in Asia. No union policy. That's amazing. The Republican Party in the United States also has that policy. Funny how it works out for sweatshops too. And Apple for working conditions that have forced workers to commit suicide. And I've talked about this at Foxconn in China, where they make a lot of Apple phones. There is a net. It's like a big complex they have. And in the middle of that complex is a net to catch people when they try to jump to their deaths. You can't kill yourself today. You got to make Apple products. Conflict materials from the Democratic Republic of Congo end up in more than 50% of all battery-powered equipment. Conflict materials. These materials that come from conflict zones. And it's usually where we rob the nation of its wealth. To cope with this, workers are forced to endure inhumane treatment, working excessively long hours for unethically low wages in unsafe conditions, facing verbal and often physical or sexual abuse, all in complete violation of their fundamental human rights. So, what can we do? What can we do about it? I'm not immune from this. I've been walked into the same kind of consumerism that everyone else has. It would be a mistake and a falsehood for me to say that I do not own things that come from sweatshops or conflict zones. From the laptop that I'm recording on right now, the microphone that I'm speaking into, the speakers that are facing me, and the large monitor on the wall that allow me to monitor my recording of this show. All of those things. Every piece of DJ equipment that I own. I know where it's made, but there are no options for me. Quoting here again, Christmas consumerism undoubtedly fuels sweatshop labor, but to place blame on consumers is misguided, landing us in the old trap of blaming individuals for a problem that is ultimately systemic. For many consumers facing stagnating wages and increasing product prices, the mainstream goods are, for the most, if not only, the only affordable options. As consumers, the best approach to the injustice of sweatshops is to support, first of all, the unionization of workers. Highlight the resistance from workers themselves and provide opportunity for their voices to be heard. Supporting campaigns for better wages and conditions despite their often slow and incremental progress. And that's one of the things that freaks us out, right? That slows us down, that stops us. When we don't see enough progress quick enough. It doesn't matter. Slow and steady wins the race. Critics argue that campaigns for higher standards often translate to factory closures. But there are two reasons to doubt this claim. Firstly, the gap in pay and conditions between the global South and the global North is so large that significant improvements can be made without removing the incentive for companies to remain invested in the global South. Secondly, in fact, major progress has already been made by labor activists challenging the status quo, yielding promising results. Bangladesh is an important example. The disturbing collapse of the Rana Plaza in 2013 killed over 1,000 workers. After that, over 200 apparel brands, such as Adidas and Primark, retailers and importers from over 20 countries across four continents, have signed up to the Accord on Fire Building Safety in Bangladesh. A total of 1,592 factories are now covered under the Accord inspection program. And under that Accord, their factories have to be inspected. Now, these are not bastions of human rights at this point, but it is a step in the right direction. In addition, although Bangladesh still has the lowest minimum wage in the world, the lowest in the world, and of course it is the envy of the United States Republican Party, $38 a month. We have professionals in this country that make that in an hour. Of course, it's not the overwhelming majority. The overwhelming majority still lives on just a few dollars a day. But in Bangladesh, their minimum wage went from $38 per month to $68. This change could be attributed to labor unrest and public protest. Despite the courage, sweatshop labor still persists. We need to show solidarity. It is unacceptable that a century after 146 workers perished in the 1911 Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in New York City, after which public outcry brought U.S. workers' rights and protections, we're still advocating for the same basic rights and protections in the global South. Do you remember that? The 1911 Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. Man, I forget how many hundreds of people died in that. And, the exits were blocked and all the rest. And they just burned to death. But we just accepted that that's the way things are. Of course, that's over 100 years ago. We've long forgotten about it, and we've now got Santa's elves making things for us in factories and faraway lands that we can't see. And we just assume everything is all hunky-dory. Yeah, this is one of those wildly uncomfortable truths, but this is one of those things that we have to face.
Don't believe you have to be like anybody to be somebody. If you're born a refugee, don't let it stop you from playing soccer for the national team at age 16. Don't become the best basketball player on the planet. Be bigger than basketball. Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything.
It's amazing that ad came from Nike. Of course, that's Colin Kaepernick doing an ad for Nike after he was unable to get another job in the NFL because he decided to protest the murder of unarmed black men. Nike is a marketing company. And by the way, I want to do something that's not okay around here. Nike employs a lot of people in the Portland, Vancouver area. They're based over in Beaverton. I think the entire city of Beaverton is definitely that's where they get a lot of their economic activity from, is the people that live in that area and work at Nike. And Nike is constantly expanding. I've lived in this area almost 8 years now. And the entire time that I've lived here, Nike gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I mean physically bigger. Takes up more and more land. And what the hell is going on out there? Because they don't make shoes. There's a big part of the campus, and it is a campus where it's just a field where they got dudes out there playing soccer. They don't make anything at the Nike headquarters in Beaverton. What am I about to do that's not okay? Nike isn't just a brand around here. It's not just a job. Nike around here is damn near a religion. And we do not speak ill of Nike around here. Melvin is about to speak ill of Nike around here because I don't give an F. The headline from the Daily Mail, Nike workers kicked, slapped, and verbally abused at factories making Converse. Quoting here, they're the world's top sport clothing brands, but for years Nike have been dogged by allegations of sweatshops and child labor. Now, workers making Nike's Converse shoes factory in Indonesia saying they are being physically and mentally abused. The way Nike gets away with this is these kind of headlines don't make it into American papers generally. And this is why a media is so important. When I started the show, this was the idea. Cover the stories that aren't getting covered. I'm, of course, not the reporter that's on the beat, but I'm the one that seeks out these stories that I think you need to hear, and then I bring them to this microphone. But see, I'm not masterful when it comes to marketing, and I was unable to grow this show as big as I wanted it to, but I still put these stories out there because I feel like they're so important. Even if you discover this years and years down the road, and you discover it here, it was still worth it to me. We don't always realize things certainly when they happen. But the way Nike gets away with this is through their brilliant marketing campaigns. And they do. They've got these marketing campaigns that make you feel like if you put on their clothes, you're just this rock star and athlete. And that's good, you know, give people that kind of confidence. And to say, you know, to have Kaepernick, even if it made you give up everything, you got to believe in, I mean, that's inspiring stuff. But what's really behind it? Workers at the Sukabumi plant, about 60 miles from Jakarta, say supervisors frequently throw shoes at them, slap them in the face, kick them, and call them dogs and pigs. Nike admits that such abuse has occurred among the contractors that make its high tops, but says that there was little that they could do about it. Hold on. So here's the way it works. Nike, because they don't make anything, they have all of these contractor factories. So what does that do? That creates this buffer between them and the abuse. And then Nike can simply say, hey, it's not us. It's the contractors that we hired. So we'll talk to the contractors that we hired, see what they can do about it. And then, of course, if the Daily Mail goes up in there again and tries to talk to those workers, well, they'll just pull that company's that contractor's contract, and they will go, Nike will go find someone else that will abuse workers. So there's always this buffer while still being able to maintain super duper cheap shoes. So, but does that mean, that you get super cheap shoes? Hell no, it doesn't. Don't ask dumb questions. Quoting here, dozens of interviews by the Associated Press and a document released by Nike show the company has a long way to go to meet the standards it set for itself a decade ago to end its reliance on sweatshops. It said that. See this article? Remember I was talking about pulling articles from the way, way, way back machine? Yeah, this one's from 2011. So we're heading into almost 20 years of Nike having these damn sweatshops. One worker at the Taiwanese operated plant, Pu Chen plant in Sukabumi, said she was kicked by a supervisor last year after making a mistake while cutting rubber shoes. We're powerless, said the woman, who, like several others, interviewed and spoke on the condition of anonymity at a fear of reprisals. Our only choice is to stay and suffer or speak out and be fired. The 10,000 mostly female workers at the factory make around 50 cents an hour. And they say that's enough for food and bunkhouse type lodging and little else. And what they do is they simply live to make these damn shoes. And there are all kinds of new reports that this stuff is still going on. So Phil Knight, the former head of Nike, who still plays a pretty significant role in their operations, during the governor's race around here, and I talked about this because it was the grossest thing that should not happen. He gave $2.5 million to the Republican candidate for governor of Oregon. $2.5 million. Now, how the hell did he amass so much money that he can flush $2.5 million down the toilet? He did it by charging you $150 and $200 for a pair of shoes that cost him maybe $2 to make, because he was able to pay a factory worker 50 cents. We could make the shoes here in America and we could definitely treat people better. And the reason he gave that money to Newt Bueller is because he obviously thought that the Republican, or Newt personally, was going to be completely on board with the way that these guys have run their business for years.
I told them that I don't have papers, I don't speak English, and that I was an immigrant. They said, no, it doesn't matter. I liked working for him, but when I saw how he talked about us when he started his presidency, I felt humiliated.
So that is an interview from a woman who says that she worked for Donald Trump. And she told Donald Trump that she was illegal. And she says that she was treated okay, but she had to speak out. Why'd you have to speak out? Because she heard the way he was talking about Mexicans, and she is obviously Mexican. I've often wondered to myself, if maybe it isn't racism that drives Trump. See, racism is what drives the base. So when he screams about how Mexicans are rapists and all murderers and all the rest, I go, okay, so that's fine. Yeah, so that's what they get from it. But what does he get from it? I often wonder if the thing that Trump is really mad about is that there's not going to be enough low-paid workers in other countries who are going to be able to work at the factories that belong to all of his rich white friends. See, when they come here, they might be able to get a better wage. I mean, it's still not the greatest wage. Our minimum wage is still something like $7.75 or $7.50, which is pathetic. But it's definitely better than $38 a month or $68 a month or 50 cents an hour. It's better than that. So maybe the real problem that they have is that those factory workers are coming here, getting jobs here in America, where they have to be paid at least $7.75 an hour, which, like I said, still not awesome. That's what drives him. But for his base, I can promise you, it all has to do with race.
She's met with the delegations from Ohio, Maryland, and just now finally Michigan, three states where the company's announced is closing plants over the next year or so. And the delegations, primarily of Democrats in these states, but not entirely, have been very unhappy with her, but also defending the company. It's a delicate balance for these lawmakers to strike, saying they want to see GM do better. They say that this is a company that's received taxpayer assistance in major ways, essentially twice, in the auto bailout and through President Trump's tax bill over the last year, arguing that the company needs to do more to hold up its end of the bargain. We just heard from a number of Michigan Democrats pointing out that the workers in Mexico who will be making the company's new Chevy Blazer, for example, are making about $2 an hour. That's just not competitive with what workers here in America are making. And they're linking this all together with the trade deal that's being discussed between the president of the United States, Mexico, and Canada.
So that's NBC News talking about GM CEO Mary Barra. They were derisively called government motors. They got bailed out when their company sank after the 2008 crash. Then when Donald Trump became president, he highlighted them. He went to their factories. He gave speeches inside of their facilities and rah, rah, rah. Then in 2017, the United States Republican Congress and Republican president decided to give them hundreds of billions of dollars more, not for doing anything, just because they are. Here, GM, here's a handy jibber in the form of $175 million. Merry Christmas, 2017. And then Merry Christmas, 2018. They said that, nah, we're going to close a bunch of factories and we're going to lay off 16, 18, 20,000 people. And just before Christmas, Merry, Merry to you. We were told that if we take care of these folks, take care of these CEOs, take care of these big companies, give them these all this free money, that they're just going to be in such a giving mood that we're not even going to be able to stand it. But where GM is moving their factories, they're going to be able to pay their workers $2 an hour. I remember this happening with Carrier also. Carrier said, look, Americans, if you're willing to work for a dollar an hour, because you got to beat what we're going to pay in a foreign country. If you're willing to work for a dollar an hour, then we'll keep the jobs here in America. A dollar an hour. Right? $40 a week, $160 a month. You can't even eat with that kind of money. So they say, you know what? Then we're just going to go someplace else. Samsung. Quoting here from the AP, Samsung Electronics recently apologized for illnesses and deaths of some of its workers, saying it failed to create a safe working environment at its computer chip and display factories. The announcement by the South Korean technology giant came weeks after the company and a group representing ailing Samsung workers agreed to accept compensation terms suggested by a mediator and of a part of a highly publicized standoff that went on for more than a decade. The company's apology was part of the settlement. Kanon Kim, a president of Samsung's Device Solutions Division, said the company failed to sufficiently manage health threats at its semiconductor and liquid crystal display manufacturing sites, as detailed in an Associated Press reporting over the past decade. Dozens of employees who have worked there have experienced grave illnesses such as leukemia and brain tumors. So what eventually brought this on? The standoff began in 2007 when a taxi driver, Hwang Sang-ji, refused to accept the settlement after his 23-year-old daughter died of leukemia after working at a Samsung factory. Hwang's efforts to clarify the cause of Yumi's death and hold Samsung responsible for problems related to working conditions galvanized a broader movement to hold businesses and the government accountable for safety lapses in their chip and display industries, which use huge amounts of chemicals. While cutting a deal and loosely admitting to lapses in safety standards, Samsung has yet to fully acknowledge its workplace environment and the direct cause of the illnesses. Since 2008, dozens of workers have sought occupational safety compensation from the government. Few won compensation, mostly after years of court battles. Half the remaining claims were rejected and half remain under review. Families of the victims have often depleted their savings and sold their homes to pay hospital bills, and some workers end up incapacitated and unable to work. F you, Melvin. Why do you gotta do this, man? And why do you gotta do this right before Christmas? Ugh, we don't really care where our stuff comes from. We don't want to know. Yeah, you do. Yes, you care. And yes, you want to know. Yes, it's wildly uncomfortable, and I'm sorry. I don't like facing it any more than you like facing it. But we don't have to accept the way things are. I did a show a while back where I went through my closet and I read all the tags of all the t-shirts, and I wear a lot of t-shirts, all the t-shirts and where they are made. I believe that out of something like 30 or 40 t-shirts, I found one that was actually made in America, and I don't even know how the hell that happened. The price that we pay is not the price that someone else is paying. See, it's all subsidized. Somebody's blood and sweat, sometimes their life, definitely their health, definitely their well-being, definitely their food budget, all of that suffers. And they say, hey, if you want stuff that's affordable, if you want stuff that's cheap, you just have to accept that reality. But that's a lie. See, because Phil Knight has $2.5 million that he gets to flush down the toilet. And he didn't get that because he's so brilliant or because he is so awesome. He got that by stealing from these workers. But of course, he got that because he stole it from them first and then he stole it from you second. We need to demand more from these companies. We need to demand more from ourselves.
These are the cities that you do not want to live anywhere around as things get worse and worse. Number 4, Denver. Number 3, Seattle. Number 2, San Francisco. And the number one city in America to avoid like the plague, Portland, Oregon. Do you know how I compiled this list? This is the list of the top 15 least religious cities in America.
So we have been told that if we are not religious, then it is we who are the problem. Because it is we who are not godly. And if we are not godly, then, well, we are just obviously the spawn of Satan. I was watching a television program earlier today. It was a call-in show, television call-in show. And there were any number of people that called in because the subject that they were talking about was religion. obviously the number of people who identify as religious are, that number is going down. But the people who identify as being spiritual or having religious experiences, that number is going up. So what's happening? When the folks talked about the churches that they attend, there was no shortage of them that said that right from the pulpit, the priest would stand up and say, before the 2016 election, before the 2018 election, stand up and say, ladies and gentlemen, there is an election tomorrow. And I trust that you are all voting Republican. Say it with me now. Are you voting Republican? Yes, we are. Say it with me now. You voting Republican? Yes, we are. Say it with me now. Are you voting for the Republican Party? Yes, we are. Why? You're standing up there at the pulpit preaching about Jesus, preaching about the word of God. And for what? Is it really his word? The things that the United States Republican Party practices, are those really the things that Jesus would want? As we talked about in previous segments, the way that a lot of our factories are run, the way a lot of companies are run, the way a lot of countries are run, enabled by conservative policies, not just United States conservative, but UK conservative, conservatives around the world. It's not a problem to be conservative, but if you're willing to sacrifice human rights for your ideology, the problem isn't with people that speak out against your ideology. The problem is your ideology. This from Raw Story, a story I saved from last year. The headline, "Our kids are upstairs. Please take care of them." New York City couple leaps to their deaths over healthcare costs. Quoting here, leaving a note that asked that their children be taken care of, a New York City couple jumped to their death early Friday after pointing out that they could no longer afford their healthcare costs. According to the New York Post, the bodies of the unidentified couple, both in their 50s, were discovered between Park and Madison Avenues. Police state that the woman had a note in her pocket reading, "Our kids are upstairs, please take care of them." In the man's pocket, another note stating, "We both have medical issues and we just can't afford the health care." Their deaths came within hours of the U.S. holding off the repeal of Obamacare, which was, of course, a huge setback for Donald Trump and the Republicans. And that's not where the United States Republican Party stopped. Oh, no. No. That was where it began for them. See, they have been railing against Obamacare for years. And by the way, Obamacare is not the greatest thing in the world. It was simply a step in the right direction. Remember, the arc of justice, it's long, but it tends to bend towards humanity. You know, bend in favor of the history that we want. But because of this policy that we have with respect to healthcare, it's the whole freaking reason I hold on to two jobs. Healthcare. I'm not 50 yet, but man, I am 80% of the way there. And I do take care of myself. I do what I can. I exercise, I eat right. I only eat tater tots 4 or 5 times a week. Who knows what the future is going to hold for me? And obviously, I'm responsible for my own healthcare. But to a degree, we're all responsible for each other, are we not? I like to think that we are. And after that, after they couldn't repeal Obamacare, this couple jumps to their deaths. Deaths are going back up again because of the lack of health care. After that, the Republican Party still found a way to F people over and strip them of their health care. Are they really doing the Lord's work, I ask you? Another headline, this from the AP. Teen suicide goes down after the Supreme Court decision legalizing gay marriage. Quoting here, teen suicide attempts in the U.S. declined after same-sex marriage became legal, and the biggest impact was among gay, lesbian, and bisexual kids, according to a study. The research found declines in the states that passed the laws allowing gays to marry before the Supreme Court made it legal nationwide. The results don't prove that there's a connection, but researchers said policymakers should be aware of the measure's potential benefits for youth mental health. Suicide is the second leading cause of death. For all U.S. teens, suicidal behavior is much more common among gay, lesbian, and bisexual kids and adults. About 29% of these teens in the study reported attempting suicide, compared to with just 6% of straight teens. Laws that have the greatest impact on gay adults and make gay kids feel more hopeful for the future, said lead author Julia Rafin, a researcher at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. The study was published in JAMA Pediatrics. The researchers analyzed data on more than 700,000 public high school students who participated in government surveys on risky youth behavior from 1999 to 2015, the year that the Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage. Overall, 26,252 students reported being gay, lesbian, or bisexual. The surveys didn't ask about transgender status. They included questions about suicide attempts, smoking, and alcohol or drug abuse. In 32 states that enacted same-sex marriage laws during the study, suicide attempts dropped 7% among all students and 14% among gay kids after the laws were passed. There was no change in suicide attempts in states without those laws. The study only included suicide attempts and not the actual deaths. Of course, more research is needed to determine which teens are most vulnerable to policies that limit gay rights. It seems to me, no matter what the conservative policy is, and it's not hatred for conservatives as a whole, I'm sure throughout history there have been some good conservatives.
He has met Europe's leaders, has got them working with us. Elect the number one man for the number one job of our time. November 4th, vote for peace. Vote for Eisenhower. A paid film.
That's a bit of an old film right there. Did you hear that? Vote for peace. Vote for Eisenhower. Eisenhower was a Republican. This is an ad that you would not hear today. So obviously, yes, there are indeed in history some conservatives that are at least semi-good. Now, Eisenhower is not without his flaws either. But could you imagine, right? I suppose you don't have to. Just look at the world around you now. The conservative policies that we have in place. Healthcare, right? Killing, the way we do healthcare, killing people, making this couple jump to their deaths, screaming about how much they hate gay people on a radio and television, and then gay kids start to feel like outsiders, like pariahs, and then they kill themselves, and then we get this Supreme Court decision that legalizes gay marriage. And the suicide rate drops among those kids. I've talked on this show. There's a study I've listened to Tom Hartman talk about for years, a study done in the UK. I don't think they did it here in the United States. But every time they have a deeply conservative government, you know, which is the House, their House and their Senate and their presidents, your prime minister, whatever it is, suicides skyrocket. They go through the roof. Here in America, every time we have a conservative president, abortions skyrocket. See, because what happens, it's like the dumb thing that happens with the guns. They go, a Democrat's in office. Oh, my God, he's coming from a gun. They buy more guns and no guns are taken away. And so what happens with abortion is like, ah, crap, the Republicans are in charge again. Well, they're going to try to tell me what to do with my body. You know what? I suppose I should just have the abortion. And abortions go up under Republican presidents. Or maybe they go up because they go, well, they're just going to F us over and everything's going to become more expensive, but we're going to have less money, so we can't afford to have a kid. I mean, who knows why it happens? But why do we continue to stand for this? Now, obviously, the way to handle this is not going to be give Democrats all the power all the time, because they've often shown that they can be awful too. And I'm not going to suggest that the solution is Democratic or Republican. I am going to suggest that it is human. See, if our healthcare system kills people and leaves people with tons of debt, underserves them, and causes their early deaths, is that a good system? Don't tell me if you're a Democrat or Republican. Just tell me if that's a good system. And if you're being honest, you'll say, no, that is not a good system. And we need to do something different. What would work? Well, something where everybody got a share of it. Everyone puts in a little and benefits a little. Everybody puts in and we look out for one another. Is that a radical idea? Is that a liberal idea? I suppose it kind of is, but it's also a very human idea. If the products that we buy cause the early deaths and the disabling of and the starving of and the suicide of other people, Should we just continue to tolerate that? Should we just continue to elect politicians who enable that? No. No, and don't tell me if you're a Democrat or a Republican. Just tell me if you think that that's a good if that's a good way to do things, if that's a good way to handle manufacturing in America. Do you think that is a good way to handle manufacturing in America? Oh, no. If you're being honest, the answer is obviously going to be no. Quoting here from an article over at USA Today. We're losing too many Americans. Suicide and drug overdoses are on the rise in the U.S. as life expectancy goes up every year. For the first time ever, life expectancy is now dropping. On average, there are more than 128 suicides per day in the United States attempted by people with and without known mental health conditions. Quoting, your suicide and drug overdoses rates rised and continued to in 2017. That's the last full year that we've got information for, helping drive the number of U.S. deaths to the highest total in more than 100 years. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said in a series of reports recently released. Life expectancy in 2017 fell to an average of 78.6 years for the total U.S. population, down from 78.7. You say, oh, it's just one-tenth of a year. Yeah, but it goes up every year. And it is now dropping. It didn't go up, and it's now dropping. Overall, more than 2.8 million Americans died in 2017, about 70,000 more than in 2016. The reports noted that heart disease, cancer, unintentional injuries, chronic lower respiratory diseases, and stroke remain the leading cause of U.S. deaths. In 2016, suicide became the second leading cause of death for ages 10 to 34 and the fourth leading cause for ages 35 to 54. Last year, 47,000 people committed suicide, a rate of 14 per 100,000. That's up from 10.5 in 1999 and 13.5 the last year. The total number of suicide deaths was the highest in a half century and up more than 2,000 from 2016. So all of this stuff is going up. These suicides are going up. Could you tell me, could someone tell me who the president was last year? No. Don't bother. Tell me who was in control of Congress last, yeah. So it's not exactly the same as the UK study, but it is pretty damning. Deaths from drug overdoses continue to be a public health burden in the United States, this according to the CDC, adding that the pattern of drugs involved in drug overdose deaths has changed over recent years. The rate of drug overdose deaths involving synthetic opioids and other methadone drugs such as fentanyl, fentanyl analogs, and tramadol increased 45% in 2017 from the previous year. The rates of drug overdose deaths involving heroin, natural and semi-synthetic opioids, and methadone were essentially unchanged from 2016. Other CDC findings: for males, life expectancy changed from 76.2 in 2016 to 76.1 in 2017. For females, life expectancy remained the same at 81.1. The infant mortality rate rose slightly from 587 infant deaths per 100,000 live births in 2016 to 579.3 in 2017. The age-adjusted death rates increased for seven leading causes and decreased for one, cancer. I suppose that's good news. The 10 leading causes of death in 2017 and 2016 in order are heart disease, cancer, unintentional injuries, chronic lower respiratory diseases, stroke, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, influenza. We should not still be dying from influenza. Go get your dang shot. Pneumonia, kidney disease, and of course, suicide. I want to introduce to you a company here in America that you may or may not have heard of. Education Corporation of America. Now, that is a phrase, that is a term, that is a company name that, in my opinion, should not exist. But they do. Education Corporation of America is one of the largest for-profit college chains in the nation and announced that it would be closing Friday, leaving thousands of students scrambling to find alternatives. This from the Denver Post. So the name of the school was Brightwood College in Texas. And if you've ever been home during the daytime, I remember seeing it growing up. Perhaps you remember the ITT commercials. I remember seeing the ITT commercials. And yes, I was, as I am now, very interested in tech. And I remember going into the school and talking with them. And they said, yes, it's like a 2 or 3 year program to do this, that, or the other. And ITT Tech heavily advertised, heavily. It seemed like it was almost every commercial break. See, because the focus is on marketing and making money and not really getting you an education. And so I went into ITT Tech and I sat down with one of their recruiters. And that's what they are, the recruiters. They're not there to help. They're there to just get your damn money. And I wasn't making more than maybe $8-$10 an hour. And I said, hey, curious about the school. And she gave me this heavy pitch. It's $40,000 to go here for like your 2 or 3 year program. And I go, ooh. She goes, it's okay. We'll loan you the money, or you get your bank to loan you the money. And I go, $40,000 to go to school. Understand this, ma'am. I don't make $40,000 in a year. That was many, many moons ago, obviously. But I go, even if I did, I'm not going to go without housing or food for a whole frigging year so that I can give you guys the money. And she just laid it on thick. She got my phone number. She called me a few times. Come on, Melvin, bring yourself back in here. You know you want this education. Go on, then. Eventually, she stopped calling. And it wasn't long before ITTT went bankrupt. And a lot of people were left out in the cold. But the point of ITT Tech was not to get you a job. It was not to get you your education. It was to get the money out of your pocket, to get you to take out a loan for ITT that you had to pay back. That was it. Brightwood College in Texas did the same thing. 19,000 students left scrambling after Education Corporation of America, one of the largest chains in America, said it was suddenly closing 70 campuses around the country. All of these students, and the students learned that the credits that they earn might not be able to be transferred to another school. And it's like a 9-month program, and it costs something like $16,000. And they said, know what? You're just out the money. And it's, and with the kids losing the credits that they've been working for, 18 and 19 year old kids, the kids put it like this. They go, it's almost like it didn't even exist. So Education Corporation of America, quoting here from the article, they work with another company that supposedly accredits these schools called the Accrediting Council for Independent Colleges and Schools. Quoting here, ACICS was shut down after the Obama administration, after the collapse of two other chains that it owned, which was Corinthian Colleges and ITTT Technical Institute. But Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, and elections have consequences, restored federal recognition to the accreditation group in November. One of the things that Betsy DeVos has decided to do as Education Secretary is push for you to just get drilled so that these companies can get as much money out of you as possible, for you to take out loans for them. ITT, take out a loan, give the money to ITT, you have to pay it back. Corinthian Colleges, take out the money, take out the loan, give it to Corinthian Colleges, you pay back the money, right? They get the money, you pay the bill. Brightwood, a dark spot in these students' lives now. Take out the loan, then we're going to disappear. We're going to evaporate with the money. Why? Because this is what Betsy DeVos has been doing. Oh, it's not going to be so bad. Trump becomes president for a couple of years. We learn our lesson. But what Betsy DeVos is doing right now is destroying the lives of a lot of young people, allowing you to be just taken advantage of by these schools. And it's not for your education. It's so that they can make more money. The show is almost over, and I've only made it halfway through my material, so let me just close with this. I have been getting a lot of calls since I started a business. A lot of calls. And those calls are all trying to offer to loan me money. You've got a business, we will loan you money. Now, if any of you have ever taken out a loan ever, unless it's from a check cashing place, you will know how hard it is to get a loan and how hard you have to fight and do your homework to make sure that you get reasonable terms. Since I started a business, though, It seems like everybody wants to loan me money, and they don't know me from a pimple on their ass. Yet they're absolutely willing to give me as much money as possible. To you out there, other business owners, I'm pretty certain you get these calls too. This cannot be a Melvin phenomenon. And I learned about something that is put in the conditions, the terms and conditions in the contract. And it's something, it's a term I want you to learn. It's confession of judgment. So this from Investopedia. Yeah, I read Investopedia. Nerd, nerd, nerd. A confession of judgment is a written agreement signed by the defendant that accepts the liability and amount of damages that was agreed on. A confession of judgment is a way to circumvent normal court proceedings and avoid a lengthy legal process to resolve a dispute. Signing such a confession forfeits any of the rights by the defendant to dispute the claim in the future. So these contracts for these loans that these D-bags are trying to get me to sign, take out the loans and get me to sign, they've got a confession of judgment clause in them. And what that allows to do is the minute I sign that, and it doesn't even matter if I pay back the loan, the minute I sign that contract with the confession of judgment clause in it, these folks can start coming after me for the money right away. They can go to court. They can get an immediate judgment against me. And it doesn't even matter if money is due from me. They can go right to court. They can get a judgment against me. And with a judgment from a court, they can begin garnishing my wages. So let's say I took out a $40,000 loan for Brightwood College. And there was a confession of judgment clause in that contract. The minute I sign that, they could go to court, and it doesn't even matter if I am adhering to the terms, the other terms of the contract. They can go to court, they can get a judgment against me, and they can immediately begin getting their money back from me by taking it directly out of my paycheck if I'm, of course, receiving a paycheck. And if I'm not, they have other ways of getting their money. It is really, it's the worst form of legalized loan sharking, but confession of judgment, I've gone into these presentations recently for timeshares, and I'm pretty certain the next one I go into them to get the free stuff. The next one I go into, I'm going to ask them, hey, just to freak them out, because that's what I love doing. I'm going to ask them, is there a confession of judgment clause inside that contract? And I can almost certainly promise you that there is. We just continue down this road where we just take from each other, hurt from each other, lie to each other, steal from each other, vote against our own best interests. And it doesn't make any sense to me. And I just got to say, so much of this is born out of Reaganomics. And I'm asking you at the close of 2018, what has Reaganomics really done for you? And I don't want you to answer to me that you're a Republican or that you're a Democrat. I just want you to tell me if the stories that I have relayed to you today, the things that I have said to you, does it make sense that we continue to do things in this way? Don't tell me your party. Just tell me if you're ready to start doing things in a more humane and thoughtful way. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TFYCPO. Find us at the Google Play Store. Find us on Podbean, any and all the rest. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement of inquiry. Email us at TFYCPO@gmail.com. We work hard not only to inform and entertain and make you uncomfortable, but also to keep an open dialogue with you, our listeners. Feel free to reach out, and thank you for listening. We're The Fire You Can't Put Out, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I have woken you up, good morning.